Everyone is listening.
Woohoo! Guess what, Brent?
What?
It's Friday.
I knew you were going to say that. Hey, welcome everybody to Newsmakers. It is a fabulous day to be living in the Mid-Willamette Valley. Thanks for joining us right after listening to Rush and the News. Nice to have you join us for some local talk.
Darn right.
Even if Rush was gone today and had a sub. But I like hearing a different voice every now and then.
Yeah, you know, like he needs to take a vacation every once in a while so he wouldn't get sick like he is today.
Indeed. Anyway, welcome everybody. We're going to talk about some local goings on here today. Sometimes it's frustrating to read the news and things that are happening with the government and the courts and activists. And sometimes it's so ridiculous it's amusing. So I'm going to stay in a good mood. Shall we start with something I find funny?
Sure.
All right. So I'm going to walk you right into this one. So
walk me into it.
What's the purpose of a union for employees to be represented by collective bargaining?
I would hope that it would be so that they get the good pay, mm-hmm. the health benefits, the good work hours, and yep. they're not abused by the employers.
That's right. Bingo. So they need to be protected from the employers, right? Because employers could mistreat them or not, you know, give them fair pay.
Well, that's what they were designed for way mm-hmm. back when the employers were making people work, you know, up to 18 hours and for pennies.
Yeah.
No benefits.
Yeah, people losing thumbs and fingers and hands to the meat grinder business and that. I get that. You know who else is unionized that the employees felt it and the employer felt it necessary to be unionized?
Okay.
Democratic Party of Oregon. That just cracks
what?
Me up. They have 10 full-time staff members in the Democratic Party of Oregon. And they're unionized, and they want to make sure that they're supporting it. Just, hello.
All right.
Now, which political party is pro-union?
Uh-huh.
That would be the Democrats.
Right.
And they're pro-union because supposedly they're fighting for the little guy, and they're the good guy against big, bad business, and people need to be protected against the employers, even them. That just amuses the bejibbers out of me. I just think that's so funny that they're unionizing their staff or they're taking pride that they're somehow supporting collective bargaining. And when they're working for them, they're working for the party that is their own watchdog. And
okay.
yet they need to be protected from this party.
Uh-huh.
I haven't seen anything this funny in an ironic sort of way since Bernie Sanders had to lay off part of a staff because they figured out as many hours as they were actually working on the campaign, they weren't making $15 an hour. You remember that?
Oh, boy.
That was so funny.
That was.
It was like, oh, well, my campaign can't afford that. I guess I'm going to have to cut back the hours or cut back the people. Bernie, isn't that exactly what the private sector is telling you? It's like,
well, that's what
everybody gets 15. Okay, but then there's going to be fewer jobs.
Isn't that what he was campaigning for, too?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He was all over it. And he would flat out, you know, oh, well, it's not going to cost jobs and it's not going to cost hours and people aren't going to get. He had to do it to his own campaign. So, so funny. And I think, I don't know, that struck me as funny. It's like, oh, it's so happy, you know, we're going to. You know, make sure we're pro-union, unionize the workforce so they can be protected against the evils of employer Democratic Party.
Sure.
So I guess their staff, obviously, on the presidential candidates. Bernie Sanders has a unionized staff. Elizabeth Warren does. Andrew Yang does and so forth. And if that's not pandering, I don't know what is.
Wow.
Anyway, I thought that was amusing.
That is amusing.
It's like, oh,
thank you for that uplifting story on Friday.
I thought the unions were necessary to protect against the employer. And that's what the Democrats hammer us all the time. But when
right.
they're the employer, well, you know what? They need to be protected from you. Very funny. All right. Where do I go next? Something interesting. Okay. It's Friday. Another
give me
somewhat
a nugget
light thing.
Of something interesting. Right.
I'll try to be interesting for once.
Okay.
So at the Chamber Forum last week, Les Zeitz, whom we're familiar with, we've had him
Salem,
on the show.
Salem reporter.
Probably the most respected journalist maybe in the history of the state.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly in his career lifetime, been doing this like 40 years or something. So if Les Zeitz's name is not familiar to you folks, he is one of the owners and editors editors of the Salem Reporter.
Right.
And also he lives on a ranch in eastern Oregon, and there's another small paper out there that he runs. And he had a long career with the Oregonian. So he was on very famous cases, the Rajneesh. I think he was twice a finalist for a Pulitzer Prize in different eras of his career. The very, very big stories were assigned to Les as an investigative journalist. He caught crooked politicians red-handed just doing his job.
You know, they're not really doing that nowadays.
They're not. And it's funny you should say that because that's what Les said.
Really?
Yeah. So he fears, because he's a man who has pride in his profession,
mm-hmm.
right, that we've lost. He's like, folks, this is not good for anybody to have lost investigative journalism and to have lost journalism in general, because
right.
they are our watchdogs, because who's going to see the malfeasance? There's a case in the talk and about it was in eastern Oregon. And some county commissioners, and they were going to overpay by $1 million for a piece of land.
What?
Yeah. So the county needed the land. They were going to buy this farmland. It was appraised at $2 million. They agreed to buy it for $3 million. Without,
that's a nice paycheck.
Yeah. So without Les Zeitz, and I don't remember the name of the paper, the Malheur Reporter.
Malheur, oh, okay. Yeah.
And it's in Vail, Oregon. You know, about as far away as we can get, you know, and still be in Oregon. Without them, nobody would have known, nobody would have paid any attention that $1 million of their tax money was being dumped. $1 million. That's a lot of money in a county like that, right?
Yeah, right.
So that's the role. If
wow.
without reporters, we don't have anybody to go into city council. We don't have anybody going to the school district. We don't have anybody going to the county commissioner meetings and being the watchdogs on our behalf. Now, we live in an era where people don't love, you know, journalists. Right.
Right.
And the statistics, I think he said they were trusted. American media is trusted about as much as we trust the Congress, which is a sad state of affairs.
So they're pretty much in bed together then. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah,
same
actually
level.
Some people
yeah.
would. So his example, because he used to work at the Oregonian for a long time. In 2000, they had 400 people in the newsroom in the year 2000.
Right.
Now there's 750.
Wow.
All those jobs are gone. And with it, the Oregonian's capacity to bring us news and investigate it and root out the truth.
Right.
Newsroom went from 400 to 75.
Just the facts, ma'am. 400. Just the facts.
Yeah, that is a little scary, isn't it?
It is.
All right. The one thing I took away, I wrote it down and put quotation marks on it because he was talking about the state of media and how we get our information.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people, unfortunately, there are people who are not listening to newsmakers who are getting information from Instagram, and they're getting their news from their Facebook feed and
right.
things like that. And
stuff that's not really fact checked.
Yeah. And even now it's in question if the New York Times is, you know, the place to go for information or the Washington Post. But
it was the Washington Post that ran with that story that wasn't fact checked about the kid that was wearing the red hat, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they lost a lawsuit.
Yes, they did. See, yeah. Well, CNN lost the lawsuit.
Oh, and right? Washington Post is next.
Yes.
They're in the lawsuit.
Anyway, his quote, Les Zeitz, that we are all told more and we know less.
That's true fact. Listen
told
to us.
More, no less. You know, my goal here on Newsmakers is to make sure that the people who
know
listen
more.
And hear it, that they know more.
Yes.
And they, to a certain extent, they know both sides. But
important.
We certainly want them to be informed when they go off try to affect a change in our community. So I did ask one question, of course. And my question was, when did we enter the post-truth era?
When?
And because I know when I think it was.
When? When do you think it was?
For me, it started with vast right-wing conspiracy. It started with, depends on what is. It started with the Clintons.
Oh, way back
at
when.
At that point, politically, and it was probably always true, and some people knew it, but I think Hillary and Bill knew that didn't matter what they said. They could have said that the sun is green and a third of the populace is going to believe them.
Wow.
You know what I mean? It didn't
yeah.
matter what they said. They knew that a third to a half of the people in the United States are going to believe them without any basis for truth.
Crazy.
So for me, and maybe it was before that, and I was just paying attention more because the Lewinsky scandal, and but the vast right-wing conspiracy, when she went on Good Morning America and said that her husband's problems were due to that and not to his own malfeasance, we knew that she was lying. She was one of two things. She was either lying or she was the stupidest person on the planet, right? She's one of those two things. And I think anybody thinks she's the stupidest person on the planet. So she's just a bald-faced liar on Good Morning America trying to get people to believe it's a vast right-wing conspiracy. And now it's 20 years later, and people don't even remember where that little catchphrase came from. It came from Hillary Clinton lying on Good Morning America.
Boom.
Right?
There it is.
And so at that point, I mean, you look at Trump and talking about how big was the crowd at the inauguration.
Yeah.
It wasn't right about that. Okay. To me, he's just like, he's a braggadocious, right? It doesn't matter, people. One, it's not a constitutional crisis for him to brag about the size of the crowd. But two, a third to a half of the people believe it. And I think he learned that from the Clintons.
Yes, he did.
We got to take a break. We're going to come right back. We've got a couple of guests coming in this hour. So it's Friday. We're going to come back and talk about a couple more local issues. This is Brent DeHart. I'm here with Dave Bourne, and you are listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
Welcome back, everybody.
What?
You're making
it's Friday. We're having fun in the studio.
All right. Welcome back to the Capital One. Can I say that? Capital Auto Group Studios. And this is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. And we were talking before the break about Les Zeitz, publisher of the Salem Reporter, in his talk on Monday with the Salem Area Chamber Forum, right?
Right.
And just want to finish up here because I told you what I thought. When did we enter the post-truth era where people would just believe it? They're believing what we want to believe, and we're believing what our people, quote-unquote, are saying. So if it's liberal news media, conservative news media, we just believe it because we want it to be true and because, well, other conservatives are telling us.
Yeah, same on both sides, right?
Yeah. Interesting talk. Les's answer to that question was he thought it was ushered in by the advent of cable news networks and needing to fill a lot of things, cable news networks, and then, of course, the internet. And it just got worse and worse and worse to the point where now we can't tell what is news. Cited an interesting study about studying people who are conservative, people who are liberal, participating in a study about news, reading news reports blind, not knowing the source. Both reported saying they would not believe or trust a news article from, say, Fox News or from CNN or MSNBC. And then they read unmarked news stories. And they found them credible, saying, well, this one is citing sources. It's quoting people. It's, you know, they've done their homework. And I believe that this is legit. Well, the conservatives were believing ones from CNN and the liberals were believing ones from Fox. Well, you know, everybody will tell you that they don't believe anything from Fox, right?
So did you not turn off your phone?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Uh-huh. We're on the air.
So anyway, nobody trusts the source. You gotta trust the source. And so his answer was with the advent of the internet and the cable news networks. And hopefully that we are going to swing a pendulum that from yellow journalism back in the, 20s, in the era of yellow journalism, and there was nothing but sensationalism.
Right.
Before the what became the New York Times and ushered in an era of, actually what people want is the information. We've swung away from people want the actual information into people want to hear what they want to hear. And his hope for the future is that we would swing back.
Right now, it's like it's headline,
mm-hmm.
sensational headline. You open it up and you get to read one sentence. And then you have to, you know, look at a whole page of ads and swipe to read more. I tried to read an article the other day, and it literally took me through 15 pages. I got one sentence per page.
Yeah, I don't have
to get to the end of the right to get to the end of the story, and I realized it was not what the headline said at all.
Right. Oh, I hate it when that happens.
So I'm like, okay, why did the headline say this, but the actual story said this? I actually read through it to find out what it was saying, and it was very baffling to me that somebody wrote the headline like that, and then you swiped so many pages just to read one sentence at a time.
And then Dave probably bought 14 things he saw ads for while he was reading the article.
Right? His squirrel, totally.
One more thing, final words on the state of journalism and news and information here in our era is, you know, we need...
what is your ringtone?
We need the Salem Reporter.
Yes, we do. Yes, I agree.
I think his point, and he did a great job of not pitching his organization. However, we're subject to that Gannett newspaper, and that's all we got, right?
Conglomeration.
Yeah, and not local, and their staff has been decimated in the last 10 years. We need the Salem Reporter. I can tell you right now, listener, I've got a laptop in front of me. I'm talking to Dave. There's a laptop between us. I'm looking at three web pages, and they're all the Salem Reporter, all three of the Salem Reporter.
Yeah.
This is an organization that does investigative journalism, that gives us the full story, that gives it to us balanced, that's trying not to have an agenda, and so on and so forth. And Les's point is, if you want this in America, and if you want it in your community, you have to be willing to pay for it.
Right.
You can't just get something for free on Facebook and have no idea if you're reading something planted by the Russians or completely fabricated by the deep fake.
Brings a new sense of you get what you pay for.
Right. And if you don't support downtown businesses, we suddenly don't have a downtown shopping district.
Right.
And if you do not support honest, reliable, trustworthy news sources, then it's going to go away too.
Yeah.
Then we're stuck with what's left, and that's unfortunate. I'm a subscriber. I'm not a spokesperson. I'm just telling you, I appreciate what's there, and we get more. I get more from there than our alternative.
Do you think it's the lack of attention span from, I don't know, 10 years ago?
Because people are going to get the news?
Yeah, because you read the headline, then you read, like, one paragraph maybe of the story, and if the details aren't in there or it doesn't interest you, you swipe and you keep going. You think that is?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Attention span. Are you kidding? We've raised a whole generation of people that if things aren't happening in a millisecond, you know, when you think about... I remember years ago, folks, in a different career, I was involved in commercials for television, and they were cutting these things like 0.4 seconds, 0.7 seconds, you know, nothing. Everything was fast. Nothing was lingering. And those kinds of images and stamps, and that's how our brain of the whole generation of the millennials and so forth, and even prior to that, were trained. And the video games, you know how fast that goes.
Yeah.
It has to be that fast, or brains are losing focus.
This from the same people that walk into polls and signs and things like that, looking at their phones.
Yeah.
Yes. I've seen it.
Yes.
Downtown.
So sometimes we do. We're going to have to rely on an educated populace. So my call to action is take the time, be more educated, educate others. Right?
Good.
Just have the awareness, people. And I know a lot of people are listening, are already more aware because, frankly, they're listening to News Talk Radio, right, and local.
Good step first.
But, so that's my pitch, folks. We need the Salem Reporter, and the only way we keep it is if more people subscribe. It's cheap. It's what, $10 a month or something?
Yeah, that's pretty cheap. All right. In-depth reporting.
We got a couple minutes before we go to break. I want to talk about one really important story in the state. And if people want, they can read the whole article in the Salem Reporter.
There you go.
All right. Hey, there's your pitch out, Les. Send me a check. the Secretary of State... we've been talking about this last year about she's thrown out, Bev Clarno, thrown out a whole bunch of ballot initiatives for X reason, Y reason, and so forth.
Yes.
On both sides of the political spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So some of them were climate action. Some of them were coming from the conservative end of the spectrum, but they're throwing them out because this word wasn't right, or they didn't have all three pages of the that's required. They only did two pages. Or in the case of these energy measures, ballot measures, she threw them out because she said it violated the Constitution. The Oregon's Constitution says you can't have a ballot measure to amend the Constitution that involves more than one subject.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you can't have something that creates, say, has something to do with the state police and also housing.
Yeah, right.
Right.
It has doesn't make sense.
Has to involve just one subject matter. So she felt that these measures involved more than one subject matter and threw them out, even though they had collected all the signatures,
right,
and having gone through the process. She didn't say they did anything wrong there, just said constitutionally you can't. Well, they sued. They went to the courts. And here you have, wow, talk about a balance of power. Talk about the constitutional issues of who gets to overrule her. Obviously, Bev Clarno is the executive branch. The judge is the judicial branch. And the people, we the people, are those people that are doing this. They're effectively acting as the legislative branch. But the measures would phase out Oregon's reliance on anything but clean energy.
Right.
Right. Well, judge says, no, Secretary of State's wrong.
Wrong.
And reversed it.
Nice.
Said it can go to the ballot and that it's just one subject. And the things that Bev Clarno, the Secretary of State, were saying was a second subject were just provisions that connect to how this transitions. So this is the subject matter, clean energy. And following that, these are the provisions of how to get to the subject matter. And that's paraphrased. That's what the judge's ruling
was. That
was
a good paraphrase.
Yeah, thank you.
Liked it.
Circuit Judge David Leith. He just ruled on yesterday.
I did that story today.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It is amazing.
That's huge.
But, it's good because we get to vote on it if it goes, because it's going to the ballot. That's good. We get to vote on it. I don't like it when they put things like that through the legislature and we don't get to vote on it.
So. And that is an issue. that's an issue that's happening to us, and it's been brought up recently, where activists are using the ballot measure as a hammer to get the legislature what they want.
Yes.
So they say, well, if you won't pass this, we're going to bring something worse to the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
They do that with the gun control that we were talking about yesterday with Cowboy Ron. They're doing that with cap and trade. They're doing that with the clean energy. They're saying, hey, we've got this, and we're prepared to move forward with this ballot measure, but if you can get through the legislature, we won't have to do this. But if you do not move for us, we are going to leverage this, and we're going to go to the ballot without you.
Sounds like blackmail.
It does sound like a little political blackmail. All right, we got to take a break. We've got a couple of guests coming up here on Newsmakers, so stick with us on this beautiful Friday Newsmaker edition on 1430 KYKN.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Rich Kansky, and this segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
And welcome back, everyone. This is Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. We are concerned about the literacy of the country, and we are here.
Just a little bit.
We are here to counteract and push the pendulum away from the post-truth era. That's our battle, right?
Yeah.
Only the truth and get the news. Okay. Hey, what we like to do here on Newsmakers is spotlight individuals, ideas, institutions, and initiatives. Did I say that twice?
Yeah, I think so.
Ideas, individuals, institutions, all that stuff. That things are happening in our community, and that's why you tune in. And so joining us here in the studio, we've got one of those individuals who is part of an institution that has an initiative. So we welcome back. We've had him on once before, Jeremy Mackay of West Salem. West Salem Ace Hardware, actually.
Mackay.
Yeah.
I remember that.
You have to say with a brogue a little bit, right?
Right.
Jeremy, welcome back to the studio.
Guys, thanks for having me.
So you're here, your involvement in West Salem Rotary, right?
Correct.
So how many Rotary clubs are in town?
Oh, right now we have quite the handful. So we have the Downtown Club, which is actually the Salem Club. We have West Salem, East Salem, South Salem, Creekside. We have a Sunrise Club, which meets in the morning, and then Kaiser as well.
Wow, that is a lot.
There's a lot, yeah.
So you have that many, and they're all viable and thriving?
Yeah. So, I mean, with service organizations in general, there's their ups and downs. I mean, things are just, they're changing, right? But there's nothing that we can't handle. And overall, the future is looking very bright for service organizations, especially in today's days where people just want to be more involved, more grassroots, more community service. So I think things are going really well.
You know what I'd like to see, and Rotary is a great organization. So mm-hmm. I want to thank you to the service of the Rotary and Rotary service to the city. But they are struggling with Lions Club and Kiwanis Club and some of these other service organizations
sure.
that seem to have a model that somewhat that life has passed them by. So Rotary is still thriving to a greater extent. But I was talking to a gentleman from South Salem Lions, and it's just really hard to get people to go into that model, the old-fashioned model of service that they do,
sure.
which is, frankly, a huge loss.
Yeah.
So
well, it's just times are different, you know. The way things used to be is you would come into a position and normally your boss would say, hey, you need to get involved in the community. You need to join this club, this club, or this club. And then you would get in there, you would build relationships, and you would network, and things would kind of take off. With today's work landscape, it's a little bit different. I want to say we just don't have as much time as we used to. And things are a lot harder, especially with younger professionals in their first or second job. Getting that free time to just get away for a lunch meeting, that's not always the easiest thing. Plus, they got families, things like that, and it's tough.
We're talking to Jeremy from West Salem Rotary, and I get what you're saying, but you really hit it when you said the employer's expectation, right?
Yeah.
I know some in town, some very large employers that said, I want you guys on a committee or a club or a service organization in this community.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some law firms. You see the same ones, the law firms, the employers, the manufacturers, maybe it's the hospital, but they have a culture of having people serve in the community. So anyway, and you, of course, represent small business.
Always, yeah.
What's going on in West Salem Rotary?
Okay, so West Salem Rotary, we're having a very interesting year, very exciting. So we've switched out a lot of our board members with new board members, and it's kind of like a changing of the guard. So we're going through a lot of retraining. Rotary International, as a larger parent organization, has more initiatives trying to get into more membership things.
Mm-hmm.
And we're jumping on with a lot of those. We're putting together this year's special. We're putting together our strategic planning and visioning sessions. So right now, as I mentioned before the break, we're doing really well with leadership. So we have the next 4 years of leadership for West Salem Rotary already planned out. Many clubs don't have that. And we're definitely taking advantage of that. We're putting together a big meeting with our leadership as well as the greater club in general. And we're putting together a 5-year plan. And so one thing I think that Rotary always has a disadvantage of, and maybe other service organizations as well, our leadership is rotating. So we have a new president every year. So like this year is my presidential year. And I really only have 12 months to do everything I want to do and try to get some type of lasting change. And that's really difficult,
yeah.
And half the time I'm just trying to figure out what I can do.
Right.
So this is going to be a really exciting year for West Salem Rotary, I think.
Do you have, you've got a berry sale, right?
Yeah,
there's
we
ways
do.
Ways to support the mission. And if you're not familiar with Rotary Does, boy, go to the website. There are so many things we probably couldn't even talk about it in this segment.
Oh, yeah.
Having to do with the community.
We could try, though.
You guys raise money, and obviously it's not about making money, about having money to serve the community, right?
Correct.
So how can we support you right now?
All right. So we do one big fundraiser, and it's a fresh berry sale, and that's generally it's May through July, basically. And we do like $150,000 worth of berries. Like, I'm talking real money. And we take all of that money and put it right back into the community. So what we're trying out now is a frozen berry sale. And this is just kind of like a New Year's frozen berry sale. And this is kind of like our think tank. This is where we try out new things. We get more digital. We try different marketing. Fun stuff like that. So right now, if you are so inclined, you could buy berries from us. Blueberries, raspberries, Marion berries, triple berries. We even have mangoes if you don't like berries. But you can get them from us. They'll be delivered in February. We're selling them from now through January 31st. If you just go to westsalemrotary.org, you can buy them there. And we have a very competitive rate per pound, just on like the same in line as with Costco, except our product is much, much larger. And it's all local fruit from Willamette Valley Fruit Co. Big shout out to those guys. They've been supplying us for about 5 years now.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Local mangoes?
Yeah, well, local production of mangoes.
Like, I'm gonna go.
I'm really scratching my head on that one.
All right, West Salem Rotary. Who talks faster, Jeremy or me, Dave?
I think Jeremy's up there. He's trying to get it all done.
We don't want to miss this. West Salem rotary.org.
Correct.
Right? Then go on the website, see how to buy some berries, frozen berries. So, yeah, Dave's been laughing at me because it's the new year. So the wife and I are trying to be healthier. And so we're every single day I'm using frozen berries.
Oh, man.
I'm using frozen fruit in some sort of mixture and so forth.
Good for you.
I got a deal for you.
Do you? You know where I can get my next batch of frozen fruit. And most of those berries are local?
Yeah, except for the mangoes. Everything is grown right here.
Wow, that is pretty good. All right, what size quantities? Do I have to buy a 10-pound bag?
Yeah, it's a 10-pound and a 30-pound.
No.
Yeah, so the 10-pound...
I was kidding.
The 10-pound box comes with two 5-pound bags. And then the big 30-pound box is a 30-pound bag in there.
Wow.
I'm going to have to empty my freezer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a lot of berries. But like I said, it's a great value. It goes to a great cause.
Which is?
Oh, so what do we do with the money?
Yes.
Oh, that's a great question. Let's see. The bulk of our money goes into scholarships. So from 1998 till now, 1998 is when we really started keeping good records. We've given out almost $400,000 worth of scholarships to West Salem students. Pretty substantial. In the last few years, we've taken up a new program called the Teacher Grant. So we reach out to all the different schools in West Salem and say, hey, is there a project that you would like to do, but you can't get approval for funding?
Nice.
And then they come to us with projects and we fund them. And it's been really awesome. And then we do other things. We did the splash pad at the park behind Safeway in West Salem. I think that was our millennial project. But it's just a lot of things like that.
So that... the thing with teachers, that's so huge. I mean,
you talked about that last time, too.
I don't know how we end up spending more money per student, and now an additional $1 billion, coming in, and then science teachers can't get the equipment that they need to do the science projects, or we can't replace textbooks that need replacing, and so on and so forth. So that's where something like the Rotary steps in and says, hey, teacher, we'll fund that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Wow. And how many, of course, of a year do you think you guys get requests for or are able to fund?
We're approved to do one per school.
Oh.
One per school per year. And if there's, for whatever reason, if a school doesn't submit, then we have extra money. We can do another project for a different school. But that's always a case by case.
That's great. That's also an opportunity for, some of these teachers, if they can't get it from the district, they have to take it out of their pocket. Right, and then you end up with work dissatisfaction and burnout and this and that. So this is all good. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, man, we used to go to field trips.
I remember.
My wife, Miss Linda, works at a private school, and they stopped doing field trips entirely.
Wow.
Some of it had to do with the liability, at least some of it, and the costs and so forth.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
That's anyway, Salem Kaiser, it's very hard because you have to schedule a bus, right? And you have to have X number of volunteer parents and they have to go through a screening. And it's just get harder and harder now. And there's less and less money for these little extra niceties, right? I loved the creative teachers I had growing up, the ones that could do something that was just outside the textbook a little bit. And have something that was not necessarily in the digits in the district's equipment budget.
I had a creative science teacher that when he didn't plan it, we were summertime. It was a nice sunny day that day, but it was cold. He took us all outside and went through all the things of outside, like in the grass being frozen and trees and all that. So he just took us outside. It was really cool to learn all that stuff. So I'm glad that you're able to help those teachers, especially science teachers, with complicated school projects. Yeah.
Definitely.
Jeremy Mackay. West Salem.
Mackay.
Am I saying it wrong? Wrong accent.
No, that's great.
West Salem Rotary wants you to go to westsalemrotary.org and buy your winter and spring supply of frozen berries.
Mm-hmm.
Support the mission of West Salem Rotary and all the money that gets poured back into scholarships and schools and community and improvements in West Salem. And buy some local produce as long as you're buying it. And putting it in your protein shakes,
right?
Putting it in your healthful food,
sure.
Or being healthy.
Or if you're baking it into some
pie.
Some pie, that sure. works too.
Desserts.
Now, the last thing I would want to add to that is maybe you don't go through that many berries, but maybe you just like the spirit of giving, don't know what to do with them. What if you bought berries from us and then maybe donated them to like UGM or something similar to that, your local church? I mean, that's a twofer. I mean, can you believe
it? The food bank.
Yeah, the food bank.
Marion Parish Food Bank. We talked to them yesterday.
Jeremy's thinking right there.
Oh, man, what a sales job. Jeremy, it's always a pleasure to see you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Continue good luck with West Salem Ace Hardware, and thanks for your service to Rotary. We got to take a break. We're going to talk a little bit preseason about the Volcanoes and how long they're going to be here. Very important. Stick with us with Mitch coming right up on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
How's that JC's Pizza?
Oh, it's so good. I love Fridays.
JC's Pizza, right here at Kaiser on River Road. Yeah,
love that. Canadian bacon pineapple.
You know, I missed you guys, but I missed the pizza, I think, a little bit more.
Mitch. No.
And now I am full.
Mitch is back.
You leave any for us?
Mitch Graff, president of baseball operations of the Salem Kaiser Volcanoes.
Business operations.
Mitch, you're an interesting dude. He's an author. He's multiple business owner. He's a nonstop energy guy. He's a family man. And boy, what things you did with the Volcanoes this last year was amazing. Attendance was up. We had some fun. Attendance was up. The food was better. Let's address it. We haven't addressed this since the day after the news came out about MLB wanting to scale back their minor league system. And the Volcanoes are at risk, quote unquote, depending on whether or not this plan moves forward. Right? So this online petition. So you guys can find that. How do the people find that?
SaveOurVolcanoes.com. And it's interesting because here we are in January. It's quiet. This is off season. There is more energy in our office and in the community right now than I think there's been probably since the inception of the team in 97. We have people that have never been to a game, ever, calling us, posting on social media, letting us know that, hey, I don't even like baseball, but you guys are part of the fabric of my community and my family, and they can't do this.
Amen.
So I even got an email this morning from someone saying, what can I do? What can we do to keep you here? And I tell people there's three or four different things. Number one, go to SaveOurVolcanoes.com.
Right.
Sign the petition. As of this morning, there's about 4,400 people locally that have signed that petition and from around the world, several different countries. Number two, come to games. I mean, that's one of the most important things we can do. And more important than that, opening day, we want to pack that stadium. We want to show Major League Baseball that this team needs to stay in Salem-Kaiser. This is part of the fabric of this community. And it's an issue bigger than baseball. It's not about baseball anymore. It's something that Democrats, Republicans, Independents can come together and they can agree on 100-0 that baseball is as American as apple pie, Chevrolet, and your mama. You know, you need to slow down a little bit and smell the roses. Baseball, we hope, is here. But if it's not, we're going to make sure this next season coming up is the most incredible ever. And it's shaping up that way. The phone's ringing like crazy. People are buying tickets at a pace much ahead of last year.
Let's make sure that we spell that out for everybody, that the 2020 season is not in jeopardy. There's going to be Volcanoes this summer.
Yes.
So
not in jeopardy whatsoever. It's 2021 and beyond. And right now, Major League Baseball has not called us. They have not sent a letter to Jerry Walker, the owner. The things that they say that they want to try to control a bit more. Number one is they want to make sure the stadiums are up to snuff, up to major league quality. Well, out of the 42 teams that are on that list, there's some stadiums that were built back in 1885 and as recent as 2008.
Wow.
Small communities, big communities. So it's touching every part of the country. Number two is the travel miles. They want to try to eliminate or reduce the number of miles these kids are traveling. They want to pay them a little bit better. Well, we're right between the Emeralds and the Hops. So our travel schedule actually is the best in the entire Northwest League. So that doesn't hold water. Number three is there's 1,200 players a year that are drafted. Very few of those kids are going to get a chance to get a drink of the major leagues. And so their thought is, well, let's just reduce the number of those guys. Let's take it from 1,200 to a lower number, which means we need lower teams. So that's the basis of their argument. Now, that's just a proposal. We have not sent a proposal back. Minor league baseball, 160 teams strong and 42 million attendance last year, has not made a proposal back. They're negotiating. They're talking about things. But like you said, this coming season is not touched whatsoever. People are calling saying, are you going away? It's like, not this year, baby. We're here, man.
So, Mitch,
we're here.
Let's clarify. Whose decision is it to make? Because there's an organization called Minor League Baseball, mm-hmm. organizations called Major League Baseball. There's an organization called the San Francisco Giants.
Mm-hmm.
Whose decision is it?
It's a Major League Baseball decision. But I tell you what, right now the groundswell that we are feeling just locally, it's being felt across the country by the other 41 teams.
Sure.
I mean, it's even a discussion in Congress. Our owner, Jerry Walker, flew back to Washington a few weeks ago and sat in front of a committee, and he didn't even have to testify. They just said, you know what? You don't have to say anything. We already are on your side. We're going to fight your battle. So there's already a committee to from the United States Congress to make a case to Major League Baseball that, nah, this isn't right. This is not right. And like I said earlier, it's a bigger issue than baseball. It's not just about jobs or tax base. It's about America. It's about local community and the fabric of Kaiser, the fabric of Salem. Much bigger, much bigger.
You know, I was saying when the Walkers were here, what I don't get, and as you know, I'm always a very long-term thinker, a long-term planner, and they can't be thinking of these minor leagues as just development tools. This is also a fan development tool. How
Absolutely.
Do they miss that? That people, youngsters, this is, they go to the game, they learn about the game, they have a positive experience,
yep.
they learn to like going to the game, following the game, maybe playing the game.
And they want to go see the Mariners or the Giants or whoever
right.
they go see.
For the next generation.
It's the future fans.
It's something they did with their parents, you yep. know, mm-hmm. their big brother or their father, or their mother, their uncle, their grandpa. Something they did and they want to do with their kids. How do they not see this is a small market and we don't have MLB, but we're creating MLB fans with them? Hello, this is your marketing plan.
I have a couple of friends that have season tickets at parks around the country, and one of my friends is boycotting. He feels strongly enough in this issue that we're talking about today that he's not going to buy his season tickets. And he's already notified his rep, notified the club, post on his social media, I'm not buying because you want to get rid of these minor league teams in these cities around the country? Nope, not going to buy. And I think as we get closer and it starts to become public discussion, it is now, but not. It's not the dinner table like it will be in a few months. Once it becomes a topic of conversation for everybody, I truly believe that the groundswell of support from everybody in the country is going to be so much that Major League Baseball is going to have to say, okay, wait a minute. Let's rethink this a little bit. Let's come to agreement somewhere in the middle.
Really
I
quickly,
really
we've got
that.
Less
yep,
than
30
half
seconds.
Half, 30 seconds. What's the timeline for the decision to be made?
I don't know.
Don't know.
Do not know.
People can help by going to saveourvolcanoes.com.
You can also buy tickets. We have a 2020 plan right now. You buy 20 tickets, you get 20 for free. Friday the 31st, we have our auction coming up. It's our annual auction, 31st. You can call 390-2225 to get tickets. We have a very limited number of tickets left, but tickets, the survey, and coming to our banquet.
All right, we got to go. Thanks for being with us on Newsmakers. It is the weekend already, so if you hadn't missed any of that, go to volcanoes.com.
Good to see you guys.
You too.
You too, buddy.
Have a great
All
weekend.
Right. We'll see you on Monday.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.